Good afternoon. It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday News. Thank you for listening to KMXT on 100.1 FM. It's your public radio station, broadcasting from Kodiak, Alaska, where it's 36 degrees, and we're looking for a 30% chance of snow before 3, mostly cloudy skies for the rest of the day, and we've reached our high temperature. Northwest wind at 20 miles per hour, mostly clear skies tonight with a low around 22. West wind at 25 miles per hour, gusting as high as 30 tonight. Coming up on the midday report, we will not be having an update from our emergency operations director. That will be back next week. Kodiak High School Shakespeares do very well in a tournament with a very long name. More water woes in the southeast Alaska village of Angoon. The Polar Star is back in Alaska, and they make a stop off in Juneau. And an encounter with a bear in Haines may make you think twice about using an outhouse. That and more after national news.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Tens of millions of homes and businesses are enduring disruptions from a deep freeze that's wreaked havoc on much of the country this week. President Biden has been in touch with governors about the winter storm that left millions without electricity, especially in Texas. NPR's Aisha Roscoe reports that FEMA is distributing supplies to help those affected by the latest storm.
White House Homeland Security Advisor Liz Sherwood Randall says the focus right now is on dealing with the immediate consequences of the storm. But she said that eventually the country will need to make infrastructure more resilient, especially in light of climate change.
Power grids across our country, particularly in Texas, are overloaded by the demands that are placed on them under these circumstances. And the infrastructure is not built to withstand these extreme conditions.
Sherwood Randall said that FEMA has distributed 60 generators to water treatment plants, hospitals, and other critical sites in Texas. She said the agency has also provided 225,000 meals for the state. Aisha Roscoe, NPR News.
New interim guidance out today, expected to sharply limit detentions, arrests, or deportations of non-U.S. citizens. The Biden administration is now directing ICE agents to prioritize the most pressing threats to public safety or national security. A DHS official cites the need to refocus limited resources. A congressional hearing on the GameStop trading saga kicked off at noon today. The trading frenzy last month became a kind of battleground between individual online investors and powerful hedge fund professionals. NPR's Kat Lonsdorf is following.
One of the biggest concerns is how and why popular trading app Robinhood decided to halt trading during the frenzy, freezing out a lot of small investors. Robinhood CEO Vlad Tenev apologized for the move.
Look, I'm sorry for what happened.
He also addressed the allegation that Robinhood coordinated with hedge funds to hurt those same small investors.
We don't answer to hedge funds. We serve the millions of small investors who use our platform every day to invest.
To Chairwoman Maxine Waters, who called the hearing, one thing was certain.
The market volatility surrounding GameStop and other securities has highlighted how many people feel that the cards are stacked against them.
Kat Lonsdorf, NPR News.
The top South Dakota prosecutor who struck and killed a man with his car last September is being charged with 3 misdemeanors, not felonies. The Associated Press reports each charge against Republican State Attorney General Jason Roundsburg is punishable by up to 30 days in jail and or a $500 fine. While investigators found the official was distracted, they say they found no evidence that he was intoxicated at the time of the accident. At last check on Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrial Average was down 118 points before the close at 31,494. This is NPR News.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
The Kodiak Area Emergency Services Organization has reported one new community spread COVID-19 case for the Kodiak Island Borough. This brings the total case count in the Kodiak Island Borough to 1,058, with 11 cases classified as active locally. Weathering a major power outage, a medical emergency, a field of talented teams, the Shakespeares of Kodiak High School took first place at the Alaska School Activities Association Drama, Debate, and Forensics State Tournament. In full disclosure, Jared Griffin is the coach of the Shakespeares and is also a member of the KMXD news team. We're all very proud of him. The Shakespeares competed in five events with finalists in all five. This was their second win in only their third year competing. They are now one of three schools with back-to-back wins. This year was different as far as tournaments go, with the pandemic bringing the contest to the internet with webcams. Actors often rely on the audience to inform their work, and without an audience, performers end up feeling in the dark. This feeling was compounded by the dramatic loss of power across Kodiak Island, rendering the Shakespeares literally in the dark. KHS senior Allie Hart was performing her piece when the power went out. She says that her teammates rushed to her aid, flashlights in hand, to illuminate her performance.
I was kind of like, okay, no pressure, but there's a lot of pressure. So I like told the judge, I was like, hey, the power went out, but I still want to perform for you if that's okay.
Allie says it all worked out nicely in the end.
And I got a one in that round, which means I got first place in that round, which is really cool. And honestly, it's all attributed to my teammates.
The Shakespeares coach was also down for the count midway in the tournament. Jared Griffin went to the ER that same evening with a kidney stone. He has since recovered. The Shakespeares team includes Marissa Abston, Arashius Bilbilis, Mary Grace Enriquez, Allie Hart, B.J. Jones, Audrey Lonheim, Davina Mellon, Garrett Pittman, Krista Simpler, and Gracie Thomas. Their work together carries on the community theater tradition here in Kodiak. Among them are many graduating seniors leaving open space in the future team. If you or someone you know is a student at Kodiak High School, you might encourage them to apply for the team by contacting Coach Griffin at Griffin Jared, that's GRIFFINJARED1 at gmail.com, or by reaching out to the KHS Drama Club Facebook page. Winter cold snaps aren't just freezing pipes and causing power outages in the lower 48. In the southeast Alaska village of Angoon, recent cold temperatures exacerbated ongoing issues with the town's water supply. As KCAW's Aaron McKinstry reports, the Coast Guard stepped in to help by delivering bottled water to a community of around 450 people.
The troubles with Angoon's water supply started on the morning of February 3rd, says Mayor Joshua Bowen.
We got a few calls about one of our main lines breaking and pretty heavy river of water coming out of it.
After a day's worth of digging with jackhammers, torches, and an excavator, the town's water operators found the culprit, a small pipe connected to a fire hydrant. They were able to bandage the pipe and stop the leak, but not before the town had lost a lot of water. Then came a stretch of single-digit temperatures.
And lots of people's lines were freezing and breaking, and we were just losing water left and right. So all of that combined was making it very difficult for us to rebuild the water supply.
The town's water pressure had grown so weak that Bowen worried about drinking water safety and reached out to the Department of Environmental Conservation to request a boil water notice, which was granted last Friday. And then
Saturday morning, we woke up and a third of the town had no water at all whatsoever coming out of their taps, mine included.
This time, another residential leak and a broken water pump were to blame.
Overnight, of all times, it decided to die on us, the motor did, and without flow going through there, it was susceptible to freeze, which it did. Froze and broke.
They quickly got to work repairing the pump, but when Bowen got a call from the Tlingit and Haida Indian tribes of Alaska asking if the town needed potable water, he said yes.
Next thing you know, I'm getting a call saying that the Coast Guard is bringing us a bunch of water, and I'm really blown away. That was really fast.
We don't usually get to partake in missions that, you know, are of immediate life safety concerns.
Jeannie Green is the captain of the Coast Guard cutter Hickory, a 225-foot buoy tender homeported in Homer. They were on their way back from dropping buoys in Ketchikan when they got the call that Angoon needed water.
Even though I understand that Angoon, you know, they were going to do okay for a few days, it did feel urgent, and man, we loved getting to do it.
When the ship pulled into the ferry terminal on Saturday evening, Bowen and members of Angoon's tribal government, the Angoon Community Association, helped distribute the nearly 7,000 bottles of water.
I brought the forklift out there, and we were able to just forklift the pallets right into the trucks, and then they went straight from the ferry terminal to door-to-door and delivered a couple of cases of water to every household.
Bowen says the additional water helped relieve pressure on the town's water system so they could get it back up and running. Angoon is working with the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium and other partners to upgrade its aging water and sewer lines. The boil water notice remains in effect until they receive test results back from DEC, which Bowen anticipates later this week. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Erin McKinstry.
The U.S. Coast Guard's sole heavy icebreaker, Polar Star, recently broke the nation's 40-year winter absence from the Arctic Circle's icy waters while on a 12-week deployment to the Bering Strait region. Back at the dock in Juneau, Captain Bill Woy Tira, commander of the Polar Star, proclaimed the mission a success. He describes the three main objectives of their deployment.
The first area of focus and the primary aim was to assert sovereignty over U.S. territory in the Arctic. We were going to project power north of the Arctic Circle and send a message to the rest of the world that the U.S. is an Arctic nation, that the U.S. cares about the Arctic, and that the U.S. will absolutely defend our territory and defend our sovereign resources in this region.
Given the nation's increased geopolitical interest in this Bering Strait choke point, and the fact that the institutional knowledge and skill set for navigating the Arctic winter is limited, Wojtyra says training personnel was the second key goal of the mission.
Everybody is interested in this region. Everybody recognizes the strategic importance of the Arctic and Alaska, and everyone is scrambling now to make sure that they have a cadre of operators that are capable and ready to go up and carry out Coast Guard missions and other missions in this region.
In addition to Polar Star's strategic national security and Arctic training objectives, the icebreaker sailed north with scientists and researchers aboard, lessening the void of information from the region and better understanding how to operate year-round in Arctic waters was their goal. Post-deployment, Captain Wojtyra confirms that the Coast Guard can safely operate in the winter in the Arctic. Over the last several years, government studies have recommended, and the Coast Guard has concurred, that the United States needs 3 heavy and 3 medium icebreakers. This will ensure a persistent presence in the polar region. Construction of the first of these heavy cutters is already in progress, following the signing of a $746 million contract with Mississippi's VT Halter Marine back in 2019. So when will Alaska see the Coast Guard again? Captain Wojtyra assures that the Coast Guard plans to continue its summer patrols, business as usual, later this year.
We're going to be running the standard Arctic Shield playbook that we've run for the past few years, which includes a seasonal, scalable, mobile presence. We're going to have helicopters forward deployed for search and rescue. We're going to have small boat teams in the right places to make sure that we're ready to respond if anything goes wrong.
Polar Star is now headed to Vallejo, California, where it will be worked on to extend its life by another 4 years, maintaining the Coast Guard's heavy icebreaking capabilities. A group of Haines residents had a bizarre encounter with a bear near Chilcat Lake on Saturday. Shannon Stevens says she was using an outhouse when she felt something bite her bottom. KHNS's Henry Leisha has this report.
Shannon Stevens spent the weekend with her brother and his girlfriend at a remote yurt on Chilcat Lake, 17 miles from Haines. After traveling across the frozen lake by snow machine on Saturday, they cooked sausages over an outdoor fire pit. Later in the evening, she left the yurt to use the outhouse.
Normally when we're out there in the summer or the fall or something, I'm used to shouting, "Hey, bear," the whole way. And it was dead of winter. I didn't think to do that this time. So I got in there and sat down on the toilet seat, and something just immediately bit me in the butt. So I jumped up and screamed.
She called for her brother, Eric Stevens, who came running to investigate.
I'm like, okay, I'm going to open the lid and look. And I take the headlamp and I grab the lid of the toilet seat and I lift it up. And right there, right at the level of the toilet seat, like maybe an inch or two below, is a gigantic bear face looking right back up at me.
He closed the lid and they ran back to the yurt as fast as they could. Shannon Stevens was bleeding, so they cleaned the wound and bandaged it up. She says she was shocked, but not seriously injured.
It felt like just a single, like, puncture. I don't know. Maybe it wasn't even a bite. Like, it might have been a swipe with his claw, potentially. I don't think we'll ever really know that part.
They stayed in the yurt the rest of the night and waited till morning to take a look around. The next day, the bear was gone, but the fire pit had been knocked over and there were tracks running towards the outhouse. Eric Stevens says he believes the bear was attracted by the smell of cooking, then entered the hole below the outhouse through an opening downhill.
There's a way out in the back of the outhouse. There's a rock wall, and there's a way for a creature to get in through that rock wall. And so he probably just pushed the rocks over and got down into the hole.
Alaska Department of Fish and Game biologist Carl Koch conducted a brief investigation after learning about the incident. He believes it was a black bear based on photos of the tracks and other recent reports of bear activity in the area.
Might be the only person this has ever happened to. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised over the years if other folks have had, you know, bizarre things. But during February, to sit down on an outhouse and have something like that happen is very unusual.
Koch says he has heard of bears damaging outhouses after being drawn to their smell. In general, bears are less active during the winter, as they tend to stay in their dens for a long period of time. But that's not always the case.
You know, some bears will stay out a long time if there's food, maybe almost never den up. There's some places where people, you know, we get calls year-round in various Juneau and all sorts of places, just not nearly as many as we do in the summertime.
This isn't the first close contact with a bear in Haines this winter. Earlier this month, a Haines man was mauled by a brown bear while backcountry snowboarding with a group of friends. The attack left him with a broken arm, puncture wounds, and other injuries. He has since been released from the hospital and is recovering at home. Shannon Stevens says her experience wasn't nearly as traumatic, but she has learned a valuable lesson.
I mean, I'm definitely going to look down in the hole next time.
You never know what might be down there. In Haines, I'm Henry Leisha.
Always look first. This year's scaled-back version of the Yukon Quest, the Summit Quest 300, wrapped up on Wednesday as the 13th musher arrived in its finish in Central. The low-key year gave mushers and organizers a chance to try out a new race format. As Alaska Public Media's Lex Trinan reports, the biggest change was a rule change to give teams more rest at checkpoints.
Whatever havoc a global pandemic might wreak on dog mushing, there are some things that feel the same as any year at the Yukon Quest, like the frigid cold of Birch Creek or the dazzling northern lights in Circle on the Yukon River that puts the entire dog yard on pause.
Isn't that funny how it makes us all, like, just stop what we're doing? I don't think I've ever seen them, like, this thick. Usually it's just a little green band, but, boy, yeah, they're whipping now.
Lee Strelo-Pagel finished her first Quest 300 this year after scratching last year when she got caught in chest-deep overflow on her final run. She got to put that memory to rest this year, finishing in 10th place.
This time, you know, we're coming back just to try and keep things a little bit more in our control.
Things were less in control for a lot of teams going over the 2,000-plus-foot summits.
Hi, guys, good job, guys.
The treeless passes get hit hard by strong winds, which blew away most of the lower-than-usual snowpack this year. That tore up many sled runners going over Eagle Summit.
Good job, guys. Good kids.
But it was Rosebud Summit early on that led to some of the most harrowing experiences for mushers, like Adam Lindemuth's team, which veered off trail and started going down a dangerously steep slope.
I fell off of my sled and was just getting drugged by the snow hook. I was holding onto the snow hook and trying to put it in while we were going down, and it eventually stuck, and I just laid there for like 10 minutes.
The 28-year-old from Willow recovered enough to finish as the top rookie in fourth place. But for all the usual trail obstacles, there were some big changes to this year's race. At checkpoints, there weren't the usual amenities like bunk beds, and mushers were asked to sleep in their trucks. Perhaps the biggest change, though, came in the form of a new rule that boosted the amount of rest mushers are required to take at checkpoints up to 22 hours.
I like it.
At the Central Roadhouse, head veterinarian Nina Hansen says she thinks the extra rest kept dogs in better condition throughout the race. Her team of vets logs body fat scores of each dog at the checkpoints.
Anecdotally, subjectively, like not having crunched the numbers, I think the dogs are finishing in better condition.
Hansen says good body condition lowers the chance dogs get injured and can even prevent more serious problems like seizures or deaths from low blood sugar. When winner Dan Caduce pulled into the race finish in Central, his leaders Titan and Phoenix looked peppy.
They went the whole way in lead.
He said he likes the extra rest, which amounts to about 50% more than what the top teams would normally take.
If it was a stand-up contest, we would not be here first.
He says he hopes it catches on in other races as well. The flip side of requiring rest at the checkpoint means that racers are disincentivized from camping on trail. Runs can stretch to 10 hours over 70 miles, a lot for any team.
If you've trained up a team, it's doable.
Some mushers lament that the changes take away some of the strategy and the authentic quest experience. An overall focus on dog care is changing the sport of mushing.
This is a new age of mellow mushing where the dogs get plenty of rest so they can mimic more the way humans are nowadays, hanging out on couches and surfing the web every day.
He'll miss the days camping out on trail, but he says he's fine with it.
I think it's the future of the quest.
His dog seems to think so, too. Reporting on the Yukon Quest Trail, I'm Lex Trinan.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Alaska faces a huge salmon challenge this year from Russia. More after this.
Did you know that eating wild and sustainable Alaska seafood can boost your immune system? Learn more about Alaska seafood's many proven nutritional benefits at wildalaskaseafood.com.
Preliminary salmon forecasts indicate poor to average runs for most Alaska regions this year. The big exception, once again, is at Bristol Bay, where another massive run of more than 51 million sockeyes are expected to return. That would produce a harvest of more than 36 million reds to fishermen. Those fish and all of Alaska's wild salmon compete in a tough global market, notably from Russia, and this year will be no exception. According to global seafood trading company Tradex, Pacific salmon catches from Russia are projected to top 1 billion pounds. As a comparison, last year's Alaska catch of nearly 117 million salmon weighed in at just over 500,000 pounds. Catches for Alaska's other wild salmon competitor, British Columbia, are again expected to be a bust. Tradex's Tasha Cadence gives an overview.
The 2020 salmon season was regarded as one of the worst on record, as BC salmon experienced some of the lowest runs in Canadian history, with preliminary harvest totals of about 2.5 million fish. Preliminary forecast for the 2021 season from Fisheries and Oceans Canada are continued to expect low salmon returns as low or similar to that of 2020.
For sockeye salmon, Cadence says the market continues to be strong.
Our pulse on the current sockeye market is that it continues to be a popular and sought-after product. We are seeing small quantities being released, however, they are the bits and pieces of larger lots. Prices are high, but remain steady, and we should expect pricing to remain this way until the 2021 salmon fisheries in Alaska and Russia start up. Our recommendation is to purchase enough for your future requirements if you want to continue to have a salmon program.
Find links at alaskafishradio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods, serving Alaska's fishing communities since 1910. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon. Welcome to your Island Messenger for Thursday. It is the 18th day of February, the year 2021. Sun rose today at 8:32, and it will set again at 6:17 p.m., giving us 9 hours and 45 minutes of precious daylight. That is a gain of 4 minutes and 52 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high was 49, set in 1922 and 96,
and a record low was 4 set in 1975. Currently, 36 degrees here in Kodiak. We're looking for some cloudy skies this afternoon, going to mostly clear skies tonight. Low around 22 tonight with west wind to 25 miles per hour, gusting to 30. For tomorrow, sunny skies, high near 30. Northwest winds to 30, should decrease to 20 tomorrow afternoon. And snow is likely for Friday night, mainly after 3 a.m. Looking at our local tides, we have a low tide that just happened here on the east side at 12:12 p.m. That was a 1.9-foot tide, followed by a high tide this evening at 6:11 p.m. That will be a 5.58-foot tide. A low tide for tomorrow will be at 11:47 p.m. 2.7 feet, followed by a high tide at 6:21 a.m. of 7.63 feet. Our low tide is about midnight, rather, 2.7 feet. Over on the west side, you have a low tide coming up at 12:42 this afternoon. That will be a 3-foot tide, followed by a high tide at 6:44 p.m. of 10.68 feet. Your low tide for after midnight will be at 12:35 and be 4.76 feet. And your high tide for tomorrow morning on the west side will be at 6:41 a.m. and be 12.37 feet. Mariners, here's your synopsis for the North Gulf Coast, including Kodiak Island waters and Cook Inlet. A 965 millibar North Pacific low, 150 nautical miles southwest of Sitka, will move this morning to 80 nautical miles northwest of Sitka and go to 975 millibars on Friday morning. It will then move inland over the Alaska Panhandle by Friday afternoon. Another North Pacific low will move into the western Gulf and go to 150 nautical miles southwest of Kodiak City and sit there at 980 millibars by Saturday morning. As a result, Marmot Island to Sitkanat, Kodiak's east side offshore, gale warning tonight and Friday. Northwest wind to 30 knots right now and seas to 9 feet on our east side. For tonight, west wind to 35 knots, seas to 14 feet. For tomorrow, look for west wind to 35 knots and seas to 14 feet. Friday night, northeast wind to 30 to 25 knots, seas coming down to 8 feet. Although it has them building back up to 16 feet on Saturday. Over in the Shelikof, Kodiak's west side, gale warning tonight and Friday. Heavy freezing spray warning tonight and Friday as well on our west side. Right now, northwest wind to 25 knots and seas to 5 feet, should build to 8 feet this afternoon. For tonight, northwest 35, gust to 50 out of bays and passes. Seas to 11 feet with heavy freezing spray developing after midnight tonight in the Shelikof. For tomorrow, west wind to 35 knots, gust to 50 knots out of western bays and passes. Seas to 11 feet with heavy freezing spray tomorrow in the Shelikof. The Kodiak Community Health Center is hosting a COVID-19 vaccine clinic today and tomorrow for people who meet the current state guidelines. Please check the state website at COVIDVAX, that's VAX with an X, /Alaska to see if you're eligible. Then you want to call 481-5000, option 3, to make an appointment to get your vaccine. You should be getting your second shot today if you are scheduled to, and first shots tomorrow for those who qualify. The Port and Harbors Advisory Board will hold a meeting on Thursday. The meeting will begin at 12 p.m. That's tonight. This meeting will be held virtually. For everyone's protection, there will be no in-person attendance. The meeting will be web-streamed online via the City of Kodiak website. Meeting packets are available at the City's website as well. If you have any questions, call the Harbor Department at 486-8080. In addition, the Kodiak Island Borough Assembly is having its regular meeting tonight, 6:30 p.m. via teleconference, and you need to go to the Borough website to find the link for that.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 2 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.